We hope that it will be the beginning of the end of the corruption of our democracy.
Well, good luck with that.
I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio's KPFK in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, up in Oregon on 91.7 FM. KYAQ in the Central Coast and 106.7 FM KSO in Cozy Cottage Grove. Out in Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI in Lancaster. Out in Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. Up in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And coast to coast and around the world. Streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, Radio or Not, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Nashville, Detour Talk in East Tennessee, and yes, 5 days a week, blanketing planet Earth on Radio Sputnik. Glad you could join us for what is clearly going to be another action-packed thrilling adventure that we call The Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. We have a lot to cover today. The show is changing by the moment, even as we speak. We will see what we actually get to by the time all is said and done. We've got breaking news on the settlement between the DOJ and Goldman Sachs. We've got news on the nominating contests over the weekend up in Wyoming for Democrats. And out in Colorado for Republicans. And, well, just a whole hell of a lot going on over the weekend and today. But we start in our nation's capital at the moment, where protesters gathered in front of the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, D.C. on Monday to begin a days-long demonstration that they are calling Democracy Spring. Thousands have reportedly gathered there, and as of Monday afternoon, just before we go to air here, while hundreds have been arrested over the past few hours, now our friend Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, who was also on hand and protesting and had announced in advance that he was willing and likely to be arrested, he has now, in fact, been arrested. Your friend, Desi Doyen, Cenk Uygur, you've been a guest hosting for quite many years on the Young Turks.
Yes, and I have to say I'm really proud of Cenk getting up there and standing up and saying what he believes in and getting arrested for it.
Well, I guess we can be proud of him for you know, standing up for what he believes in and paying the price. They over the Young Turks, they have been great on this issue. At least one of the major issues that the Democracy Spring folks are concerned about, which is money in politics. We're going to be going to a reporter or two there in D.C. momentarily, as soon as we can get them on the line. The group, which is using the hashtag Democracy Spring, they have also set up a website at democracyspring.org. They're calling for four specific small d democratic reforms, as I understand it, in addition to overturning the Citizens United ruling that essentially legalized unlimited corporate campaign contributions. Democracy Spring is also calling for a modernization of America's voter registration system, the creation of a public campaign financing system, the restoration of the Voting Rights Act provision that was gutted by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2013 that used to require jurisdictions with a history of racial discrimination at the ballot box receive pre-clearance from the DOJ or federal court before instituting new voting regulations. Well, scrapping those requirements has led directly to voter suppression laws around the country this year that we have been reporting on all year long, including photo ID voting restrictions, which have disenfranchised untold thousands of legal voters, the shortening of early voting period, restrictions on voter registration, and much more. Resulting in, by the way, by way of just one example, those five-hour lines we saw a few weeks ago in Maricopa County, Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, just a few weeks ago. That was after the county had decreased their polling places to just 60, an 80% reduction in the number of places to cast your vote in Phoenix, an 80% reduction from the last time that there were two contested presidential primaries back in 2008. And so that reduction would have had to have received federal approval prior to the gutting of the Voting Rights Act by the Supreme Court in 2013. That's just one of the issues being protested out there at the nation's capital today.
And to be clear, that is because of Maricopa County's previous history of passing laws that suppress the vote. So that's why this preclearance function was so important, because they're passing laws, those who would like to suppress the vote, pass the laws so quickly, faster than the court system can keep up. So by gutting that preclearance, they actually made that those long lines at the Arizona primary very much in
well
impossible.
They did, and that's an issue that has been coming up in state after state after state, where we've seen these long lines in North Carolina, in Texas, in Florida, places that would have had a lot of these changes reviewed and perhaps rejected, I should say probably rejected, by the Department of Justice and the federal courts. Which is exactly why Republicans wanted to do away with the Voting Rights Act. In the meantime, out there in D.C., where they are now protesting all of this, thousands of protesters reportedly. Cassandra Fairbanks from Sputnik News. I hope we're going to talk to her momentarily as well. She said the crowd went absolutely wild when Kai Newkirk, who's one of the organizers of Democracy Spring, when he announced that they had already broke the record for the most arrests at the U.S. Capitol. Kai Newkirk is the founder of the 99% movement, one of the founders.
The 99 Rise movement is what they're called.
99rise.org, where the organizers now say they plan to continue holding days of protests at the nation's capital at least for the next week or so. Here's Kai Newkirk speaking on RT, I believe.
Yes, this was an interview on RT earlier. Actually, it was a few days ago. They have been walking from Philadelphia. This is a protest that began at Independence Hall in Philadelphia, and they've walked to the nation's capital for the protest that took place on Monday. Here's Kai Newkirk.
We hope that it will be the beginning of the end of the corruption of our democracy. We're walking from Philadelphia, 140 miles to D.C., demanding that Congress take action to end the corruption of big money in politics and ensure free and fair elections that give us all an equal voice.
Well, that would be nice. Okay, as I say, moments before we go to air here, our old friend Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks was arrested at these protests. Joining us to tell us what the hell is going on out there at the nation's capital is Jordan Chariton. He is a political reporter right now for the Young Turks, and presumably he has not yet been arrested. Jordan Chariton, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Brad?
I'm doing okay. So let's see. Cenk was just hauled away, our jailbird friend.
Yeah, he was one of the last to go. There was a couple hundred people engaged in a sit-in right in front of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And it took about 4 hours to gather them all up, put little zip ties behind them, and haul them off to jail. Mm-hmm. And Cenk was arrested, I'd say, about a half hour ago and put into a prison bus. We don't know how long he'll be there. He's probably, like the rest of them, being processed still. And he was standing out there strong, fighting, you know, very non-violently and peacefully against the corruption and this revolving door we have now between corporations, lobbyists, and our elected officials.
Now, he knew, he had said in advance that he was going to be arrested today. So I guess there was no surprise there. But they saved him for last for any particular reason?
Well, I don't think the police did him any favors. He just was positioned right on the standing on the steps of the Capitol, mm-hmm. whereas the people who got arrested first were sitting, you know, in circles together right mm-hmm. in front of the Capitol. So the police rounded them up first. There was a huge mix, a lot of young people, some older people, and Cenk was, along with Ryan from the Wolfpack and some other folks, they were standing on the Capitol stairs and brought into the police wagons last. It was really peaceful, no incidents with police and, you know, arrestees.
Mm-hmm.
And across from where the arrested people were, there was a huge gathering of non-arrested folks who were chanting and, you know, marching about the same thing.
And
people are tired of the money in politics.
And for those people who don't know, the Wolf Pack that Jordan just referenced, that's a super PAC that was actually formed, I guess, by the Young Turks or with the Young Turks to take on the issue of money in politics and get corporate spending out of it. Is that the best way to describe it, Jordan?
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a lot of members from the Wolfpack from different states.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually, you know, for this march today, I met people from Seattle, out west who came in just for this. I actually met someone from abroad who came in for this. So, you know, this is part of a broader movement, as you know, that's fed up with the corruption and the money in politics. This started actually with a march from Philadelphia
mm-hmm.
to D.C. I think it was last week. And there's going to be activity here for the next few days, actually. We're going to do it all over again tomorrow.
Well, that's what I understand, that these protests are currently scheduled to go on for days through, I think, April 11th or so. Is this going to now happen every day? And do you have any idea, is Cenk going to be arrested every single day and all of these other protesters, to your knowledge?
Well, at the moment, Cenk's not answering my calls. But so I can't tell you what he's going to do.
Right.
But I do know that the other protesters, there is definitely plans for more arrests. Whether that will be repeat arrests, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there will definitely be more protests and more peaceful marches for the next few days. You know, kind of we want to put the pressure on. We want to make some noise. And, you know, put the spotlight beyond just the presidential campaign.
Are they planning, to your knowledge, an Occupy-style camp out there overnight, or will they be returning each day to the Capitol?
Yeah, I don't think there's plans to really have, you know, overnight Occupy-style protests. But they're definitely, you know, part of the thing today was trying to raise awareness on social media and through other channels to get more people out here in the next few days. Today was definitely a good start. Several hundred people, I'd say, got arrested. But the protesters and those arrested were definitely communicating for more people to come out. But it's not, I don't see this, you know, being similar to Occupy in style, in terms mm-hmm. of them sitting out overnight and really camping out.
I know the Young Turks has a lot of followers, and a lot of them, as I understand, are participating in the demonstration today. Who are the groups that you know of who are working to organize this? And would you consider the Young Turks as one of the organizers, or are they just a sort of a participant there?
Yeah, I think it's more a participant, but obviously Cenk announcing it and promoting it, you know, definitely rallied more people. There was mm-hmm. a huge, huge legion of TYT fans out here,
mm-hmm.
and there are also different groups who were organized here beforehand. There was a lot of planning for the last few months for this week, not just today. But Young Turks, I don't think, is a formal sponsor or anything, but definitely a participant. And there was a lot of students out here. There was a lot of, you know, I actually met some veterans out here, so mm-hmm. it was a real cross section between young people, older people. And a lot of them, you know, have been saying the same things you hear in the presidential campaign. Buried in $100,000 student loans. You know, older people saying that, you know, they're tired of the politics as usual. And a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters as well. But Young Turks was definitely a big participant, I'd say.
And before I let you go, Jordan Cheriton, I don't know if you've spoken to Cenk about this specifically, but are there ethical lines that you see that he is crossing between advocate and journalist with something like this, or has the situation just gotten to the point that things are so bad that this is what's called for?
Yeah, no, I don't really think so. I think that Cenk would never portray himself as, you know, a nightly newscast anchor or a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's definitely a commentator. He wears his beliefs and his opinions on his sleeve. So, you know, if the media pundits want to talk about ethical lines, they could do that. But, you know, frankly, I think journalism, if you want, you know, journalism with a capital J is really just about, you know, being on the side of the truth and the facts. And I think the truth and the facts speak for themselves. You know, we know what kind of money politicians are taking in, and then we know what kind of legislation they're giving to the people. So those are the facts. I don't think Cenk is very worried about, you know, whether it makes him look like he's more of a, you know, advocate. I mm-hmm. think he wants to be. If this is what he's advocating for, he'd be happy to, you know, be labeled that.
And how many, you said there was a few hundred that were arrested. How many would you say, Jordan, were actually there and protesting overall, who, you know, the folks who weren't arrested?
Yeah, I don't have the final count, but it was definitely like from the march from D.C.'s Union Station all the way to the Capitol. Had to be at least 1,000 or two people marching, I would guess, because there was on our side, you know, there were two sides: the arrest side and then the non-arrest side.
Mm-hmm.
On the non-arrest side was a couple hundred people, and on the arrest side was a couple hundred too.
Gotcha. Thanks, Jordan Sheridan. Really appreciate it. Stay out of jail if you can. Jordan Sheridan, political reporter for The Young Turks. We may be in touch as the week goes on and as the situation continues to develop out there in our nation's capital. Thank you, Jordan.
Thanks.
You bet. Okay, joining us now for another take, also from the nation's capitals, Cassandra Fairbanks, who's covering the Democracy Spring protests out there for Sputnik News. Hey, Cassandra, welcome back to the broadcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure. Thank you. Now, were you there? We just spoke with Jordan Sheridan from the Young Turks. You were there when our friend Cenk and all of the others were arrested over the past, what, hour or two?
No, the arrests have been going on since about 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I've been there for all of them. They're saying there was at least 400 people arrested, and it was over the course of like several hours.
But
he just got arrested last.
And 400 people arrested. I guess they expected this was going to happen. What is your take on what the folks are calling for out there at these demonstrations, and above and beyond the number of those arrested there today, how many demonstrators would you say from your estimate were also there protesting?
Well, I'm not even sure how many people were mm-hmm. protesting. It was separated. There was a police line for people who didn't want to get arrested. That was about a block away. We could see them, but I couldn't see how far it went mm-hmm. behind them. So there was probably several hundred there, and then there were, you know, several hundred who got arrested. It was quite a big crowd. I think that their demands are fair. It was nonpartisan, money out of politics.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What are their specific demands, as you understand them from the folks that you're talking to out there?
They want to end Citizens United, get money out of politics, one person, one vote, essentially. There were a lot of chants against superdelegates.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wearing Bernie Sanders gear.
Okay. They were against superdelegates. Of course, that's done by the Democratic Party, a private party, and the way they organize their own delegates, I guess, is up to them. But was this only, as far as you could tell, was this predominantly Bernie Sanders supporters, or are there Hillary Clinton supporters? Are there Republicans out there? Is this a?
I highly doubt there were Hillary Clinton supporters in this crowd. Republicans, possibly, especially of the, you know, Trump crowd,
mm-hmm.
definitely would not. I would assume that there were not Hillary Clinton supporters, though. She's kind of the face of big money politics.
Do you have any sense, Cassandra Fairbanks, where this goes from here? I know they're planning to stay out there for about, you know, for the next week. Will we see a similar scene day after day, or are there different events? Any sense of that from organizers?
There are different events planned throughout the week, uh-huh. but I'm hearing talk of another round of sit-ins tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
some friends of mine are going to be participating, who usually would not actually protest. So I was a little shocked.
Well, you bring up a good point that I had spoken with Jordan Cheriton about is the ethical line between journalism and activism. And you actually mentioned, I believe, earlier on your on Twitter, on your coverage there, that you were having a difficult time remaining in your role as a journalist, as observer, and was actually thinking about joining those folks who were arrested for this cause.
Yeah, well, when it first started, the police started pushing all the press out. So naturally, I got mad because freedom of press.
Right.
And I'm credentialed at the Capitol. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I have credentials specifically for that place. And they were saying that I couldn't be in there. If I went in, I was going to get arrested. So I called my editor, and I was like, listen, I'm going in. I'm going to get arrested. They're not letting press in, and somebody has to document this.
Right.
So I'm going in, and then as the day progressed, eventually the police, once I started yelling and screaming, he was like, okay, listen, we're going to let people in who have congressional credentials, but you have to stay on this tiny little square way over here. And people were being arrested on the opposite side.
Uh-huh.
So I couldn't really see them. I was having trouble filming. And I just got into it. I mean, everything that they were saying, I agree with. I was pretty tempted.
Well, do I understand you correctly, Cassandra, that they were keeping the press away from where people were being arrested so you could not see those arrests going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, you could see them, just not very clearly. We were being kept all the way across the Capitol on the other side. Like, if you're facing the building,
yeah.
The people were being arrested on the left side of the building, and press was being penned on the right side of the building. And so it was very difficult to get good shots because I didn't even have my good camera with me.
Well, what are the chances of Jordan says that everybody was very peaceful, there was no violence whatsoever. None at all. And yeah,
no.
And so what was the purpose? Do you have any idea why they would want to keep the media so far away from the actual ongoing arrests? Did they give you any explanation?
I have no idea. But they wouldn't, like, the huge problem that I see with this is they only let in about 10 journalists and members of the press, because the only people who were allowed in were people who had congressional credentials, mm-hmm. which, you know, you have to live within 25 miles of D.C. A lot of, like, citizen journalists, live streamers,
mm-hmm.
they don't have those credentials, but they do press. And so they weren't able to even get where we were.
Well,
I mean, they were up by the street.
Are you saying that were the arrests inside the Capitol building or outside on the stairs?
They were outside on the steps, but they moved people all the way back to the street, which, if you know how the Capitol is set up, it's very far, and they had a double police line in between those people and the Capitol.
I see. So you were only able to get into the perimeter. You were one of the group that was able to get into the perimeter because of your congressional credentials, your Capitol credentials.
But then a live streamer, very well-known live streamer, Revolutionary Z, mm-hmm. he streamed in Ferguson, Baltimore, all over the place, very well-known. The cops kept threatening to arrest him, and I saw a police officer point at him and say, we got to get that one, because he defied them and came in and did his job as press.
Was he arrested ultimately?
No, ultimately they let him come over to the area where I was.
All right.
But it was only, like, you know, a very small, tiny little area. We weren't allowed to step off the curb.
Are you planning
to... It was frustrating.
I would guess so. Are you planning to cover all week out there, Cassandra?
Hopefully. That depends on, you know, how much
Sputnik
wants to cover it, I guess.
I gotcha. All right. Well, I appreciate that, Cassandra. Stay out of jail yourself, and we'll be in touch with you throughout the week as this all moves forward. Appreciate you checking in with us today, Cassandra.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
That's Cassandra Fairbanks from Sputnik News. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with more broadcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with you here. We will keep our eyes on those protests as they move forward today and throughout the week in Washington, D.C. In the meantime, some breaking news. Also, not long before we went on air today, very busy day, as I said. Goldman Sachs has agreed to pay $5 billion to settle the risky mortgages, as AP describes it, the risky mortgages that they invested in, that they bet on, that helped lead the nation and the globe, frankly, to economic disaster back in 2007. So, okay, what happened here? Well, Goldman Sachs is now going to pay, according to AP, let's see, the Justice Department announced a $5 billion settlement with Goldman Sachs over the sale of mortgage-backed securities leading up to the 2008 financial crisis. The deal resolves state and federal probes into the sale of shoddy mortgages before the housing bubble and economic meltdown. Requires Goldman Sachs, the bank, to pay $2.4 billion in civil penalties and an additional $1.8 billion in relief to underwater homeowners and distressed borrowers, along with $875 million in other claims. This agreement is the latest multi-billion dollar civil settlement reached with a major bank. Other banks that have settled over the past 2 years include Bank of America, Citigroup, and J.P. Morgan Chase and Company. And unlike those 400 people who were arrested over the past few hours in Washington, D.C., none of these bankers are going to jail even for a minute. None of them are getting zip ties. None of them are getting handcuffed and being sent away even for a minute, much less overnight. All they got to do is pay their money. And, you know, it's the cost of doing business. So they made enormous profits. Then they got bailed out by the U.S. government when their risky bets with investors' money tanked the global economy and resulted in millions of Americans and other people around the globe losing their homes through no fault of their own. In other words, these banks, like Goldman Sachs, they made the profits. We socialized their losses in what they still pretend is a free market. It's a free market.
Of course.
It's a free market, except, you know, when we lose everything, the government will come in and bail us out. Other than that, totally free market.
And it's the invisible hand, I would say, of the taxpayer bailing them out whenever they take these risky bets that threaten the entire global economy.
And now they promise that, but they're going to pay a large fine. So everything's fine. It's a large fine, which, by the way, they will be able to write off on their tax return, most likely, you know, as an expense, just the cost of doing business.
The ordinary cost of doing business. BP, they got the same deal in the BP oil spill litigation.
That's right. And their settlement, billions of dollars, it's a tax write-off. So it's, you know what, no one goes to jail. Win-win for everyone. But God forbid, you know, don't sit on the U.S. Capitol steps when the police ask you to leave. You'll go to jail for that. So, you know, yeah, it's a win-win for the banks, for everybody, I guess, except for we the people. You know, the rich pay no real cost for their crimes, frankly, versus the poor who still serve time in jail and have their lives destroyed for the pettiest of crimes. I guess in capitalist America, some crimes are more forgivable than others. So in the case of Goldman Sachs and these other banks, slap on the wrist accomplished. Congratulations, boys. All of which helps to explain, I guess, the latest state of our presidential nominating contests and certainly these protests out there in D.C. today. Where you've got candidates on both political parties, frankly, continuing to enjoy the support from Americans who are furious about this kind of treatment of wealthy oligarchs. On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders' campaign continues to enjoy success in no small part based on his promise of taking on the banking system, millionaires and billionaires. On the Republican side, the promises of both of the leading candidates pretending that they are also mad about that treatment for rich people, even as the folks on the Republican side continue to support both fiscal and legal policies that continue to let those very same millionaires and billionaires they pretend to be upset about, it lets them off the hook, and it even grants them more leeway to enrich themselves at the expense of the poor and disappearing middle class. So to that end, there were a couple of presidential nomination contests over the weekend. I'm going to get to some information on that in a moment. But as to the actual free market, I want to make sure we get this in. The actual free market that GOPers pretend to believe in. On Friday, we told you Bruce Springsteen had announced that he'd canceled a concert coming up in North Carolina due to that state's enactment of a bill that allows for blatant discrimination against the lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans community, the LGBT community. Just days after North Carolina's Republican governor, Pat McCrory, signed a bill allowing discrimination in North Carolina against the LGBT community and all of the individuals in it, and indeed banning local communities from instituting anti-discrimination laws. So that was the Republican governor. And a few days later, Mississippi's Republican governor, Phil Bryant, signed a similar bill. So Bruce Springsteen said he was not going to, he's going to cancel that concert, cannot appear in good conscience in North Carolina, given what that state legislature and that state governor is doing. And now today, Canadian rock star Bryan Adams announced that he too was canceling a scheduled concert, this one in Mississippi, due to that state's new law allowing businesses to deny services to LGBT individuals. Bryan Adams said in his statement, quote, "I cannot in good conscience perform in a state where certain people are being denied their civil rights due to their sexual orientation." He said, "Using my voice, I stand in solidarity with all my LGBT friends to repeal this extremely discriminatory bill. Hopefully Mississippi will right itself and I can come back and perform for all of my fans. I look forward to that day," says Bryan Adams. So there's your actual free market right there. And frankly, I hope it continues. I hope it continues to cost Republicans in those states dearly. Next free market stop, the ballot box. To that end, as mentioned, there were a couple of presidential nominating contests over the weekend. Let's go with the Democrats first. Desi Doyen, what do you say?
Well, sure. Why not?
Why not? We usually go with the Republicans first. So let's put the Democrats first here. Up in Wyoming, the Democrats held their caucuses, their presidential selection, presidential preference caucuses over the weekend. Sanders was the winner of that. Bernie Sanders was the winner of those caucuses, at least when it came to the vote percentages. Sanders won 55.7% to Hillary Clinton's 44.3%. It was a 12-point win. However, because of the way they apportioned delegates up there in Wyoming, the delegate pickup for Bernie Sanders was essentially zero. Both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton won seven delegates apiece. Now, there was a lot of noise, a lot of concern from Bernie Sanders supporters over the weekend, because apparently the turnout for Bernie Sanders at the actual caucuses around the state was much, much larger than Hillary Clinton's. And well, here's just one commenter. I believe this was from Facebook, said, "Just got back from the Casper caucus. First impressions, Bernie voters outnumbered Hillary voters by nearly 10-1. Bernie's side of the auditorium dwarfed Hillary's side." And I've seen photos that sort of back this up. "We were told just before voting started that Hillary had just under 300 early votes to just under 100 for Bernie. Those totals, plus voters at the caucuses, were announced as 977 total. End result, 18 delegates for Bernie and 20 for Hillary at this particular caucus. This person says, what I can say is this: Bernie supporters were shocked, surprised, and angry at the results. So what appears to have happened is a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters showed up for these caucuses, and then they came in with a whole bunch of what are called surrogate ballots. These are essentially vote by mail that you're allowed to do when it comes to caucuses, at least in certain states. It's different for every state by state. But if you are unable to make it to the caucuses for any reason, for health, etc., up in Wyoming, you are allowed to send in essentially a vote by mail, a surrogate ballot. Now, the only reason you're supposed to be able to send in a surrogate ballot is for either religious observance, military service, disability, illness, work schedule, or if you are a student studying abroad. Now, a lot of people were very concerned about this, and justifiably so. There's a good reason to be concerned. There's a good reason when it comes to caucuses. I kind of like them because you can actually see what the hell is going on. In this case, what you could see was these vote by mail ballots being brought in, tons of them for Hillary Clinton. Now, CNN reports that a Clinton campaign had said their, quote, secret sauce in Wyoming was the state's onerous vote-by-mail rules that required anyone voting by mail to have voted as a Democrat in the 2014 midterms. Now, I have been unable to find that rule specifically online anywhere, so I tried to contact the Wyoming Democratic Party about these concerns, and I've sort of been playing phone tag today with the executive director of the Wyoming Democratic Party. She had responded in email that it's a bit more complex than that soundbite from that CNN had, and that she would love to explain it in detail. So I will look forward to doing that with Amy Van Cleave, the executive director of the Wyoming Democratic Party. But I can tell you that I know that the Clinton campaign has been very aggressive when it comes to these surrogate votes, these surrogate ballots in the caucus states. I know that they were very aggressive with this in Washington state, so it would not surprise me if they were equally aggressive when it came to the state of Wyoming. At the same time, while I know Bernie Sanders supporters are quite concerned about it, there are ways to go about finding out if these votes, if you question their legitimacy. For example, these ballots, these surrogate ballots, ought to be open to the public, as the way these caucuses essentially are. So you could make a public records request of some format with the Democratic Party up there in Wyoming and find out who these people were who cast these vote by mail ballots, and try to find out, if you like, if in fact they appropriately voted via mail, if there was an appropriate reason for them not to be able to show up to the caucus, or if they even know about it, and if they know about a vote by mail being cast in their behalf. Now, as of now, there is no evidence that there is foul play here. I heard a lot of people say, oh, Hillary Clinton and her shenanigans again. Look, I've had to say it before on this program. Nobody follows this stuff or is more concerned about this stuff than me. I've been covering election fraud, voter fraud, everything else for more than a decade. And believe me, if I had evidence that things had gone sideways, I would be delighted to break that story at bradblog.com and here on the broadcast. And if I do find such evidence, I will put that forward. But to go out there and yell and scream that Hillary is stealing the election, that the DNC is rigging it for Hillary without actually having evidence to back that up, I think that's irresponsible. And frankly, it makes it more difficult for people to take you seriously when we do find evidence of malfeasance, evidence of manipulation, and so forth. So, to those Sanders supporters complaining, there are reasons why there could be surrogate votes for Hillary, and a lot of them. And, please, I ask you, go investigate. go find out. Go talk to the Wyoming Democratic Party and get information on those votes and see if they have concerns and see if they will show you who voted and do a sampling. Take some affidavits. Make sure that all of these ballots were cast correctly, lest you begin to sound like folks from the Republican Party, supporters of Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. So, well, I will explain here. And by the way, actually, there was one point that I wanted to get to, moving back to Wyoming for one quick second. Jeff Winchell, who runs a data science blog called Politics with Soul, he reported that 71% of Hillary's votes in the state's four biggest Democratic counties and four smaller counties were mail-in. 71%. That is a big percentage. And so, you know, there are reasons to be concerned. I just wanted to point that out. There are reasons to be concerned. But until you actually have the evidence that something went wrong, that somebody is stealing something or rigging something, I don't know. Consider me unimpressed with the claims that it is being rigged. Okay, moving back now to the Republican side. In Colorado, there was a Republican state delegate conventions were held across the state in a whole bunch of counties over the weekend. Ted Cruz won all 34 available delegates over the weekend.
Ted Cruz won all of Colorado's Republican delegates.
All of them.
Wow.
Donald Trump won 0. John Kasich won 0. Cruz completely shut them out. Cruz had the ground game in this case. Just the way it can be argued that Hillary Clinton had the ground game, at least when it came to surrogate votes up there in Wyoming. CNN reported it this way in Colorado. In yet another sign of his airtight ground game, Ted Cruz spoke before a huge screen displaying his slate of delegates for the final 13 spots of the 34 that they were selecting in total. And he noted that his slate was also printed on the bright orange T-shirts that his many volunteers were wearing on the state convention floor. Trump's campaign, by contra, and mind you, there was, for these last 13 spots, there was some 600 candidates who were allowed to give speeches that were 10 seconds long each.
Oh,
I'm
no.
not kidding. Yeah.
That's terrible.
So, you know, the Cruz campaign, what they came up with was, let's print bright orange shirts and put our delegates, the delegates that we support, that you can vote for, onto these shirts so everyone can see them on the convention floor when you go to vote. So Trump's campaign, by contrast, initially distributed flyers listing the campaign's national delegate candidates that were riddled with errors. This was the list that Trump put out to ask his people to vote for. Errors all over the place. The flyer displaying the Trump slate is supposed to be the tip sheet that party members use to fill out their ballot. But on the first slate that the Trump campaign was giving out, more than a half dozen of their delegate candidates were listed with the wrong delegate number. Some of the delegate numbers corresponded to delegates that were supporting Ted Cruz.
Oh, dear.
Oops.
That doesn't bode well for his ability to organize anything.
To be president of the United States. The Trump campaign reprinted the flyer, but the second flyer also included several errors. He's making these conventions great again. An advisor to the Trump campaign said that the team had been given incomplete information by the Colorado Republican Party about delegate numbers. So he blames the Colorado Republican Party for their shenanigans. It was unclear how much confusion that caused when votes were then cast, but the Trump campaign acknowledged that it did not expect to win any delegates in Colorado, and it did not. So in that sense, Trump succeeded. He still, however, maintains a wide lead over Ted Cruz in the delegate count, as both Ted Cruz and Donald Trump continue to attempt to win the 1,237 delegates needed to clinch the Republican nomination. But, says CNN, at a time when a contested convention looks increasingly likely, you think, there was palpable disdain for Trump's candidacy amongst the GOP faithful in Colorado. His string of unforced errors, nasty tweets, and controversial policy statements in recent weeks have clearly taken a toll, reports CNN. In the meantime, a guy on Twitter, a Trump supporter who goes by the name of, DJ Lewis is his name, or Umpire 43. Looks like he's a 22-year Navy vet. He now lives in Florida. He tweeted out a link to a bradblog.com story over the weekend to Trump supporters that got a lot of attention, a lot of retweets. So thanks for that, Umpire 43. Here was the first tweet from the ump. He said, here is Utah. All, and I mean every one of their 110 Diebold machines had trouble and had to be fixed. He followed that up with saying, all Diebold touchscreen voting systems fail on election day at 110 polls across Utah County, Utah. And that, in fact, is the headline from one of my stories at bradblog.com. And it's a short story, so I'll just read it to you very quickly. Well, I said, it's a good thing last Tuesday wasn't a presidential election with really huge crowds of voters in Utah County, Utah, as polls opened at 7 a.m. digitally encoded cards used by voters to begin the voting process on the state's oft-failed, easily manipulated 100% Diebold AccuVote, 100% unverifiable Diebold AccuVote touchscreen voting systems didn't work at all at 110 polling locations across the county. A programming error was blamed. Voters were forced to wait in line for up to an hour while technicians struggled to figure out how to correct the failure. Many voters simply gave up, walking away and becoming disenfranchised in the bargain when they couldn't hang around to wait that long to vote on a workday. Sound familiar? As usual, the widespread failure, countywide in this case, was marginalized by the media as little more than a glitch. Of course, had the county used paper ballots, nobody would have been disenfranchised or had to wait online for an hour to cast their vote. Voters across the entire state are now forced to vote on the Diebold touchscreen systems on election day. So you get the idea. Things didn't go well in Utah County, Utah, and of course the Donald Trump supporters are furious about it. They believe that once again it's the Republican Party. Actually, they believe it's Lion Ted. Lion Ted
personally went there
Lion
and
Ted
messed
Cruz
up the machines.
Is, yeah. Well, here's the bigger problem. That story that I wrote that was quoted was from November 5, 2010. So I'm pretty sure Ted Cruz didn't have anything to do with it, and it had absolutely nothing to do, of course, with how there was no primary actually in Utah this year. They had caucuses instead, as I recall, for the Republicans. One of them, by the way, they did was via internet voting. So
oh,
if you
right.
Republicans are worried about the 100% unverifiable touchscreens, you should be even more worried about the fact that your party, at least in Utah, wants to go to 1,000% unverifiable internet elections. And they did, in fact, do that for their caucuses a few weeks back. But in any event, of course, when I tried to point this out, I was accused of being a Cruz stooge. I was a Cruz bot by pointing out that, I don't think this is evidence. There may, you know, Ted Cruz, he might be out there stealing the election. Republicans might be out there stealing the election.
Gaming the machines.
They could be.
A story from 2010 when neither Cruz nor Trump were running is probably not the supporting evidence they're looking for.
Not the best evidence. Yes. So when I, you know, when I yell and scream at Bernie Sanders supporters to, hey, just because you're suspicious, just because you're concerned, and in elections, you are supposed to be suspicious, you are supposed to be concerned, but just because you have those suspicions doesn't mean the bad guys, whoever you would like to believe are the bad guys, have actually stolen the election. Go out and find the evidence. My concern is that when we make the evidence impossible to find. In fact, if you look at these Diebold machines from 2010 that failed, not only did it disenfranchise voters, but even had they worked, there is no evidence to support that any vote ever cast on any touchscreen voting machine like this has ever been recorded accurately for any voter. It is 100% faith-based voting. And folks who have listened to this show for years, have read bradblog.com for years, know that I have been trying to make that case, trying to say that, yes, this is why you don't want an election system like this. Because people are supposed to be suspicious. They're supposed to be able to oversee their own public elections in order to make sure that Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, whoever, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, to make sure that they are not stealing it. And the only way you can do that is if you can oversee it. And you can go back after an election and look at the ballots, the hand-marked paper ballots, and know that there was a secure chain of custody and that those ballots actually reflect the will of the voter. So keep being suspicious. Keep being paranoid. Just please, 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 let's find some actual evidence to support the concerns. And by evidence, I don't mean six-year-old stories from bradblog.com that have nothing to do with this election. A quick break, and we're back with more Bradcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned.
Please come to Boston for the springtime.
Welcome back to the Bradcast.
I'm staying here.
Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. The Boston Globe did something absolutely brilliant over the weekend, and I would say it's absolutely brilliant journalism. They released a front page from the Boston Globe dated Sunday, April 9, 2017, with the headline, huge headline, Deportations to Begin. President Trump calls for tripling of ICE force riots continue. Picture of Donald Trump standing in the White House, what looks to be the White House, says live now, president addresses the nation. Breaking news, Trump deport illegals, quote, so fast your head will spin. And curfews extended in multiple cities due to riots over Donald Trump's deportation. I should say due to President Trump's deportations. What they did was they put out a front page, a fake front page.
A future.
Yeah.
One alternative future.
Yeah, and it's kind of brilliant. I mean, it's somewhat Onion-like, except that it wasn't a joke here. It's saying that, and here's how they described it in their editor's note. They said, this is Donald Trump's America. What you read on this page is what might happen if the GOP frontrunner can put his ideas into practice, his words into action. Many Americans might find this vision appealing, but the Globe's editorial board finds it deeply troubling. Other headlines on this Boston Globe front page from April 9, 2017, markets sink as trade war looms. And they've actually written all of these stories and laid it out like the paper. U.S. soldiers refuse orders to kill ISIS families.
Wow.
New libel law targets, quote, absolute scum in press. Legislation could supplant state laws. It was really quite brilliant and also kind of humorous. If you looked down at the bottom, there were some smaller items. Trump on Nobel Prize shortlist.
Okay.
Inside the paper, they promised NASA engineers halted the launch of an unmanned probe amid fears that its new gold leaf trim would interfere with radio communications.
Gold leaf trim, I guess, being a reference to Trump wanting it to be the best satellite ever.
Yes, yeah. So, so that
the
part,
most beautiful satellite.
That part was sort of onion-ish, but heavy spring snow closed Trump National Park for the first time since it dropped its loser name Yellowstone in January.
So they had some fun with it,
but they
turned the whole front page into an editorial, essentially.
Well, And I don't know that this was their actual front page. I believe they released this as a PDF, and they had an editorial along explaining why they were doing this to give you a sense of what they think that their paper will look like 1 year from now, essentially, when Donald Trump becomes president. And make no mistake, He will become president.
Oh, I think you're... Hopefully, I think you're wrong about that.
Wrong? Okay. I think I am wrong, too. Actually, I hope I am wrong, too. But we will find out. But I think this was actually quite brilliant, even though it was, like I said, sort of onion-esque in its approach. I think for an actual legitimate newspaper to do this, I think is very smart journalism from a mainstream corporate media outlet. And how often do you hear me saying that?
Not very often.
Desi Doyen, our producer, I want to thank you very much. Thanks to our booking goddess, Cynthia Cohn. And thanks to my guest today, Jordan Cheriton of the Young Turks and Cassandra Fairbanks of Sputnik News. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it, like always, from bradblog.com. It is free. Or you can go on over to iTunes and you can subscribe for free over there. And we hope you will leave us a good review. When you do, make it a little bit easier for everyone else in the world to find the broadcast as well and to spread the good news or the bad news or the disturbing news.
Take your pick. However, at least until President Trump takes over everything and changes it all.
Exactly right. However you regard the news. You can also reach me anytime via the Twitters and you know, feel free to send me links to stories that I've written 4 years ago. I'm always happy to see them again. I am The Brad Blog at both Twitter and at Facebook, and you can email me as well. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. All right, I think we're good. Is that it? That's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.